Welcome back, everybody. Ready for another deep dive? Today we're taking a look at a pretty tough document, a manifesto called Nigger Cell. And just a warning right up front, we're going to be quoting some really strong language directly from the source material, because as jarring as it is, it's kind of crucial to understanding this author's mindset.
Absolutely.
But just to be super clear, we are not endorsing any of these views. No. We're here to analyze and understand.
Not to
sensationalize or anything like that.
Approaching it like a puzzle, you know, just trying to piece together how this ideology came to be.
Okay, so this manifesto, it's attributed to Dr. Matthew Copps and Harris Floyd Jr.
Okay.
And that name itself is already kind of raising some eyebrows.
Yeah.
He claims to be a young African-American man born in 2007.
Okay.
From a family of Black Israelites. He even says he left a graduate program at Duke University because of racism.
What's so interesting about that is, like, right off the bat, you get this dissonance between that background.
Yeah.
And the ideology that's expressed,
right,
which is really heavily rooted in white supremacist and accelerationist thought.
Yeah, and it's such a clash.
Huge clash.
With the Black Israelite upbringing, right?
You would think that those two things wouldn't go together,
right?
And yet here they are, right in front of us.
Yeah, it almost feels like he's trying to be provocative.
Yeah, yeah.
Or maybe even to hide his true identity.
Could be a manipulation tactic too.
Yeah.
You know, to sort of sow confusion or discredit certain groups by associating them with this kind of rhetoric.
Yeah. Okay. So let's try to understand this core ideology a bit better.
All right.
What are the main themes that run through this document?
I mean, it's saturated with hate towards a whole bunch of different groups: Black people, Jewish people, Hispanic people, immigrants, LGBTQ plus people.
Wow.
It's a long list.
Yeah.
And he doesn't just hate these groups. He outlines like a really detailed plan of action against them.
Yeah. And what did you find most disturbing about his proposed solution, so to speak?
His obsession with violence.
Yeah.
He wants a violent revolution, a race war even. And that really lines up with this ideology of accelerationism.
For those of us who aren't familiar with accelerationism. Right. Can you break that down for us a little bit?
So accelerationism basically says that the current societal order, it's broken.
Okay.
It's beyond repair, and its collapse is inevitable, even desirable in some cases. And accelerationists believe that we should actively make that collapse happen faster.
Oh, wow.
Through disruption and chaos.
So in his mind, he's like a catalyst.
Yeah.
Or maybe even a hero in bringing about this collapse.
He absolutely seems to think it's his duty to get rid of the people he thinks are undesirable.
Wow.
And he doesn't just talk about it in vague terms.
Yeah.
He gives like really specific instructions on how to achieve this.
It's really hard to grasp the level of hatred and dehumanization.
It is.
In this document. It's like he's completely detached from the reality of the violence that he's calling for.
And that detachment is a hallmark of this kind of extremist thinking.
Yeah.
It allows them to do these horrific things and justify it all in the name of some warped ideology.
So where do these ideas come from?
Okay.
What are some of the cultural influences that might have shaped his worldview?
Well, he mentions a bunch of influences.
Okay.
Mostly online stuff, like internet forums like 4chan, Soyjack. Those are known for their extremist communities.
Yeah.
And then specific internet personalities, you know, who are known for spreading this kind of hateful content.
He even mentions Kanye West.
He does.
That's a bit surprising.
Yeah. And it really shows how he takes these figures, these public figures, and kind of twists their messages to fit his own worldview.
So it's not that these figures created his ideology, but that they maybe gave him a way to
framework, a language to express the anger and resentment that was already there.
Yeah. And while those spaces online can certainly amplify extremism, isn't it also possible that he was already prone to these views?
Yeah, absolutely.
And just found validation online.
It's likely a mix of both,
yeah,
to be honest.
Yeah.
But what's for sure is that these online spaces, they can become echo chambers.
Right.
Where these extreme beliefs get reinforced.
Yeah.
And they escalate.
He also mentions video games, especially violent ones.
Yeah.
It's a common thing to hear after these sorts of events.
Right.
But is there really a connection between gaming and this kind of a violent ideology?
Well, the role of violent video games in all this, it's complicated. And there's a lot of debate about it.
Okay.
It's unlikely that playing these games directly causes someone to become an extremist.
Right.
But for someone who's already got, you know, violent tendencies.
Yeah.
These games can make them less sensitive to the consequences of violence.
Right.
And they can even provide a sort of a twisted blueprint, you know.
Yeah.
For carrying out attacks.
And that brings us to this really disturbing concept that he outlines,
yeah,
called crime maxing.
Crime maxing, yeah.
What does that even mean?
Well, it's this awful blend of fitness advice and tactical planning.
Huh.
And it's all geared towards maximizing the impact of an attack.
Oh, wow.
And the notoriety of
that,
it.
That's a deeply unsettling concept. It's,
yeah,
like he's created this game, this twisted game,
yeah,
where human lives are just points.
Right. He wants a high score,
yeah,
in suffering.
Yeah.
It's a very narcissistic worldview.
Yeah.
It's driven by a need for notoriety.
Yeah.
A need to be infamous.
Right.
It's not enough to just commit violence. It has to be impactful.
Yeah.
It has to be memorable, you know, even stylish.
Right. And he even draws inspiration.
He does.
From past attackers like,
sure,
Brenton Tarrant and Peyton Gendron, who he calls saints.
Yeah, it's this hero worship,
yeah,
that's so dangerous.
Right. He wants to be remembered alongside.
He wants to be part of this,
yeah,
twisted pantheon of mass killers.
Right. And that hero worship, it kind of perpetuates this cycle of violence,
like,
right?
One act inspires the next.
Yeah, it's a terrifying thought.
It is.
So let's get into the specifics of his plan a little bit.
Okay.
Who are his targets and what kind of tactics does he advocate?
He's got this really detailed list of targets.
Okay.
He breaks them down into hard and soft targets.
Uh-huh.
But he makes it clear that all of them are valid targets in his eyes. And this includes schools, government buildings, religious institutions, and of course, people from all the groups that he hates.
And it's not just the target list, it's the language that he uses to describe these targets.
It's so dehumanizing.
It's chilling.
Yeah.
And that dehumanizing language, it's a tactic, right?
Absolutely. It's how they bypass empathy.
Yeah.
It's how they see their victims as enemies to be destroyed.
Right. They're not even people to him.
Not even people.
Yeah. And what makes this manifesto even more alarming is that it's essentially a blueprint.
It is. It's a guidebook for anyone who might want to carry out these kinds of attacks.
It's a scary thought.
It is. It's why it's so important to understand this kind of thinking.
Yeah.
Not to condone it.
Right.
But to combat it.
Right.
Effectively.
It's a daunting task.
It is.
But understanding the roots of this hate, the cultural influences, the psychology behind it, it's a good first step.
It's essential.
Yeah. It's a stark reminder of how dangerous unchecked extremism can be.
Yeah.
And the very real threat that these individuals can pose.
Absolutely.
When they feel, you know, alienated, disempowered, and fueled by hate.
We need to be vigilant.
Yeah.
We need to know the warning signs. We need to build a society that's more resilient to this kind of extremism.
Yeah. Where these ideologies don't take root as easily.
Exactly.
This is just the beginning of our deep dive.
Yeah, there's a lot more to uncover.
We've got a lot more to unpack in this document, so we'll continue exploring it in the next book.
So now that we kind of have a grasp of the author's background,
mm-hmm,
and his, you know,
yeah,
core ideology,
yeah,
let's get into these plans for violence.
Yeah.
Because this is where his obsession with crimaxing really takes center stage.
All right, I'm ready to dive in, but
yeah,
I got to say, this is the part I'm dreading the most.
Yeah, I get it.
The level of detail in his plans is just, it's really alarming.
It is. He goes beyond just listing targets. You know,
yeah,
he analyzes their weaknesses.
Right.
And even gives advice on how to cause the most casualties.
Wow.
It's really methodical.
Yeah, I was particularly struck by the section where he talks about hardening targets.
Right.
You know, he recognizes that some places are going to be harder to attack than others.
Yeah.
But But he doesn't see that as a deterrent.
No, not at all.
Does he?
He sees it as a challenge.
Yeah.
You know, he wants his readers to study past attacks.
Right.
Learn from what worked, what didn't work.
Right.
And figure out creative ways to overcome security measures.
Wow. So it's like he's taking military strategy.
Yeah, exactly.
He's applying it to acts of terrorism.
Yeah, it's like he's turning terrorism into some kind of twisted strategic puzzle.
Yeah, it's a frightening thought.
It is.
That someone could be so strategic about something so horrific.
And this is where, you know, remember we were talking about the influence of violent video games?
Yeah.
This is where I think that influence, if it's there, really becomes apparent.
Yeah.
Because he's applying that same kind of strategic thinking.
Right.
The obsession with optimizing tactics.
Right.
That you might find in a video game.
And it's a scary thought.
Yeah.
That those skills you might hone in a virtual world.
Right.
Could be transferred to the real world.
Absolutely. And he even encourages that.
Yeah.
You know, he wants his readers to train.
Right.
To practice with weapons.
Yeah.
To become proficient with the tools of violence.
Wow. So it's like a...
It is. It's a call to action.
Yeah.
It's a blueprint for turning fantasy into reality.
Yeah. And it's not just physical preparation. Mm-hmm. There's a whole section on image.
Yes.
Creating a spectacle.
A lasting visual impact. Yeah.
Yeah.
Remember climaxing. It's not enough to just commit the attack.
Right.
It has to be stylish. Mm-hmm. It has to be memorable.
Yeah.
It has to be something that people will remember, will talk about.
It's like he's trying to, like, build a brand.
Exactly.
Almost like terrorists use specific symbols or slogans.
Yeah.
He wants to be remembered.
He does.
He wants to be an icon.
He wants to be an icon of terror.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's, you know, a very narcissistic way of looking at the world.
Right.
It's all about him and getting that notoriety.
Yeah, it reminds me of, you know, there have been cases where mass shooters have worn specific outfits or use specific symbols.
Yeah, like they're trying to create a uniform.
Yeah.
For their twisted ideology.
That's intentional, right?
It is.
Those images.
Right.
Those symbols.
They stick with people.
They do.
They spread fear.
Yeah.
They inspire copycats.
Right.
And they just amplify the impact of the violence.
It's a scary thought that something as simple as an image can be so powerful.
It can.
And have such a lasting effect.
It's like a virus.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Spreading from one person to the next.
Right.
Infecting minds with hatred and violence.
And it's so easy to spread these ideas online.
It is. And that's one of the big challenges we face today. It's become incredibly easy to spread this kind of content.
Right.
And it's incredibly difficult to control it.
Right.
We have to be aware of that.
Yeah.
We have to understand how these ideologies spread.
Right.
And work on developing ways to counter that influence.
Yeah. It's a tough battle.
It is.
But one that we can't afford to lose.
Absolutely not.
All right. So we've talked about the author's ideology, his motivations, his tactical planning.
Right.
But there's this other layer to the manifesto that I find equally disturbing. And that's his personal story.
Oh.
You know, his descent into this hatred.
Yeah.
It's almost like he's trying to justify his actions.
He is, right.
Paint himself as a victim.
Yeah, trying to explain how we ended up on this path.
Right.
And that's something we see a lot with extremists.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
They often portray themselves as these outcasts.
Right.
As righteous warriors fighting against a corrupt system.
Right.
They create this narrative of being persecuted.
Right.
Of being wronged by society.
And then they use that to justify what they do.
Exactly.
Yeah. He talks about his childhood, about feeling like he never fit in.
Uh-huh.
Being bullied, ostracized.
It's a common story.
Yeah.
Sadly.
Yeah. He also says he experienced racism.
He does.
Both in his personal life and at Duke University.
Right, which he says he left because of that.
Yeah, it's tough to know how much of that is true.
Right, but it's clear that he's trying to present himself as a victim, as someone who's been pushed to the brink.
Yeah, and there's this clash
between
his claimed experiences
and
the ideology that he embraces.
Absolutely. He's claiming to be a victim of racism.
Right.
While simultaneously spouting white supremacist views.
Yeah. It's like he's picking and choosing.
Yeah, he's cherry picking elements of his life
right.
to fit this pre-existing narrative of of victimhood, well, of resentment.
Right. It's like he's trying to convince himself as much as his readers.
Yeah, he's going to make it seem like,
yeah,
like his hatred is justified.
Right.
Like it's a logical response to the, yeah, pain that he's experienced.
And for someone like this, yeah, who feels isolated, rejected,
right,
that sense of purpose, even if it's twisted, can be really appealing.
Yeah, it's seductive.
Yeah.
It offers a sense of belonging, right, a community.
Even if it's a community built on hatred and violence.
Exactly. And,
yeah,
and he talks about finding comfort.
Yeah.
In these online communities,
right,
in the writings of other extremists.
Yeah.
And those spaces, they can become echo chambers.
It can.
Where hatred and resentment just get amplified.
Right.
And where people are encouraged to see themselves as victims.
Right, right.
Of some grand conspiracy.
And it's like this vicious cycle, right?
It is.
The more they immerse themselves in these ideologies,
right,
the more alienated they become.
Right. And it just confirms their worldview.
And pushes them further away from mainstream society.
So they're in further down that rabbit hole.
Yeah, it's like a descent into darkness.
It is.
This gradual process of radicalization,
yeah,
that can end in these horrific acts of violence.
And it often starts with that feeling of isolation.
Yeah.
Of not belonging.
Right.
Of feeling like the world is against you.
And that's why it's so important to understand this process.
It is.
You know, this journey from isolation to extremism.
If we want to stop these tragedies,
right,
before they happen,
yeah,
we have to find ways to reach these people,
right,
before they get completely consumed by hate.
Right.
We have to show them that there are other paths.
Yeah.
That there's hope.
Right.
Outside of this twisted worldview.
It's a tough challenge.
It is.
But this manifesto, it shows us just how important it is.
Absolutely. We were not just talking about ideas here.
Right.
We're talking about real lives.
Yeah.
Real communities.
That are at risk.
That are at risk, yeah.
We have to have these difficult conversations.
We do.
We have to confront these uncomfortable truths.
Yeah. If we want to create a world where this kind of hate can't thrive.
Yeah.
We have to.
All right, so as we go deeper into the author's personal story,
yeah,
we'll start to get a better understanding of the things that pushed him down this path.
Right, we'll get more insight into the psychological factors,
right,
that drove him towards violence. It's a disturbing journey.
It is.
But it's one that can help us understand the dark side of extremism
and the need to confront it.
Absolutely. We'll continue this exploration in the next part.
We've spent the last two parts really digging into this manifesto's, you know, the dark ideology,
yeah,
unsettling plans.
Right.
And I kind of want to explore these influences that the author claims in a bit more depth.
Okay.
He mentions Candace Owens, Ethan Ralph, Nick Fuentes.
Yeah.
These are figures with a real range of views.
Yeah.
Some associated with, you know, the right wing, even white nationalism.
Right, right.
And it's a fascinating and troubling mix, especially when you consider,
yeah,
that he also claims to come from a family of Black Israelites,
mm-hmm,
and expresses hatred towards white people.
Yeah, it's a lot to unpack.
It is. How do we even begin to make sense of this seemingly contradictory collection of influences?
Well, I think this is where we see the author's, you know, selective interpretation at play.
Oh, okay.
He latches on to very specific ideas from these figures.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And often kind of twists their meaning to fit his own pre-existing biases.
So it's not really about these figures influencing him directly.
Right.
But more about him using them.
Yeah. He's using them as props,
yeah,
in his own twisted narrative.
Right.
It's not genuine intellectual engagement. It's more like, you know, yeah, confirmation bias.
Right.
He's looking for things that confirm what he already believes.
Right. And ignoring anything that
challenges it.
Yeah. Yeah. And we see this same approach.
We do.
With his mentions of music genres,
there,
like insulcore and shootercore.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which are known for their violent and misogynistic lyrics.
Right. And he even name drops Kanye West.
Yeah.
Who, while, you know, controversial.
Yeah.
Has never come out and advocated for this kind of violence.
Right. Right. It's almost like he's making a playlist for a revolution.
Yeah.
Pulling tracks from different artists, but only focusing on the angriest, most violent verses.
And that really highlights a key danger,
yeah,
of this kind of extremist rhetoric.
Okay.
And that's the danger of decontextualization.
Right. Taking something.
Taking ideas.
Yeah.
Taking symbols, taking entire cultural movements.
Right.
And stripping away their original meaning.
Yeah.
Twisting them.
Yeah.
To serve their own hateful purposes.
It's chilling to think that
it is.
That something as complex as a musical genre,
yeah,
or a public figure's career,
right,
can be reduced to just a soundbite.
Yeah, just a weapon.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a reminder that we all need to be critical thinkers.
Absolutely.
To question sources and be wary of those who offer, you know, simple explanations.
Right, easy answers for complicated issues.
So the author also goes into a lot of detail about how he would actually carry out an attack.
Yeah.
He talks about, you know, getting weapons, choosing targets, evading law enforcement.
Right.
It reads almost like a manual for terrorism.
It does. It does. And I understand why we're not going to get into the specifics of that.
Yeah. We definitely don't want to give anyone any ideas.
Right. We don't want to contribute to the spread of this kind of thinking.
Right. But it's unsettling to know just how detailed his plans were.
And that's really important to remember.
Yeah.
You know, we're analyzing this manifesto to understand it.
Right.
To understand the dangers.
Yeah.
But we absolutely do not want to help it spread or inspire anyone to commit these kinds of acts.
Right.
Our goal is to shed light on this.
Yeah.
Not to equip anyone to do these horrible things.
It's a fine line to walk.
It is.
But it's a necessary one.
Absolutely.
And ultimately this document, it's just one case study.
Yeah.
It's a snapshot of one person's
journey.
Yeah, yeah.
Into this world of extremism.
Yeah. Right. It doesn't represent everyone who holds these views.
Not at all.
But it does give us some really valuable insight.
It does.
Into this mindset of someone who's been radicalized.
Right. And the factors that contributed to that and the dangers that this ideology poses.
Yeah. Yeah. And it really emphasizes how important it is to recognize those warning signs early on.
Absolutely. We need to understand the role of these online echo chambers and the real world alienation that people feel.
Yeah.
And we need to intervene early.
Right.
To prevent these tragedies.
So what can we as individuals do to counter this threat?
That's a great question.
It feels overwhelming.
It's easy to feel powerless.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there are things we can do.
Okay.
The first thing is to educate yourselves.
Okay.
Learn about these ideologies.
Right.
Learn about their tactics.
Yeah.
Learn how they recruit people. Be aware of the warning signs.
Right.
In your own communities.
Yeah.
Both online and offline.
Okay.
And don't be afraid to speak up.
Right.
When you see hate, when you see bigotry.
Yeah. Challenge.
Challenge it.
Okay.
Support organizations that are fighting against extremism.
Right. It's about being vigilant.
It is.
Informed and engaged.
Engaged. Absolutely.
And maybe most importantly.
Yeah.
We need to foster empathy and understanding.
Yes. Absolutely.
In our daily lives.
Reach out to people who feel marginalized.
Right.
Reach out to people who feel isolated.
Yeah.
Create spaces for dialogue.
Yeah.
For disagreement, even with people that you fundamentally disagree with.
Right. Even with people who
whose
views we find repulsive.
Yeah. Show them that there's hope. Yeah. Show them that there's connection.
Right.
That there's community.
Yeah.
Outside of these hateful ideologies.
This deep dive it's taken us into some really dark corners of the human psyche.
It has.
But it's also reminded us of the importance of light, of compassion, of our shared humanity.
Absolutely.
It's a reminder that we all have a role to play.
We do.
In building a better world.
A more just world.
Yeah.
A more equitable world.
Yeah. Yeah. A world where hatred and violence aren't the answer.
Thank you for joining us on this journey.
Yeah, thanks for sticking with us.
It was difficult, but it was important.
It was.
And keep questioning, keep learning, and keep fighting for a better tomorrow.